All right, Big Minute Man. Now, I just want to say to all of you that signed up, you're going to be glad you did. Big Minute Man, we went out to actually rehearse this out at Mike Lowe's apartment in Braintree, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun there, definitely.
You biked out there. It was a rainy day. You biked in the rain.
I was soaked, but it was worth it.
That's when Mike, you know, in the main content, he jokes about it was a long ride, wasn't it? So yeah. That's like an inside joke.
That was the long ride. Yeah, Scott, that was definitely the long ride.
Scott's bike ride in the rain, but we had a great time. There was a lot of camaraderie. There was a lot of extra history, but there's also a lot of great jokes, and because Mike does an impersonation of JFK, you're going to hear Scott's great impression of Mike Tyson come in there.
Silly impression, definitely.
It's silly having Mike Tyson talk about history. But anyway, without further ado, these are some of the bloopers and outtakes that we recorded about a week prior to our main podcast at Mike's apartment with Mike Lowe of JFKExperience.com.
Only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us, even Scott, would not...
Not even me?
Any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, including Scott and Tom, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
There you go, yeah. Hey, that guy. Now, that's great projection, great inflection. Excellent job. Excellent job.
Oh, man.
That really resonates when you get into that character. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
No, I get, yeah, thank you. And then you're going to do another, I think we're going to do another one, another shot, and you're going to ask me another question. Or maybe we'll just do one.
Okay, that's...
Think the bona fides are established, or maybe two.
Okay, and then, this is good. So along those, we ask you, how did you write that?
Well, I didn't. Sorensen did.
Yeah.
He's honest, too.
That's great.
Well,
and then you say on the campaign.
Yeah, actually on the campaign. Write what? The ask not phrase or the whole speech? What are you referring to?
Whatever you want to tell us, however you want to frame it. Yeah, I'm talking
well, I asked,
about the speech.
Well, I didn't know when you said, how did you write that? I didn't know if you were talking about the ask not phrase or the speech.
Yeah, so how did you write that speech? Wow, I said that's amazing. Wow, yeah.
Well, actually, I asked Ted Sorensen, my chief speechwriter.
I didn't. Sorensen did.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then go into it. Yeah. Any humor is just like the best.
Oh, yeah. Boy. I'm going to be irreverent in this one. That's what it is. All right.
We love that.
Sorensen wrote it. But I said it.
Yeah.
That's what's important.
yeah, man.
And don't you fucking forget it.
I'm sure he had a nice potty mouth. I'm sure he did.
Oh, yes, yeah, he swore like a trooper.
Can you do Mike Tyson, the boxer doing strong?
Oh, Mike
everything.
Tyson.
Mike, what are Mike? You're a great boxer. What are your thoughts on JFK?
I think he's got nice ears.
It's pretty good.
It's
you
just
look
out
like
of
We're gonna have to put Mike Tyson in there somehow. We haven't figured quite out how to work it.
Yeah, ballerina too.
Remember,
right?
But I asked Sorensen. I asked Ted to review all other inaugural addresses. All other inaugural addresses. Read each and every one of them, and find out what worked and what didn't in those inaugural addresses. Now, is that an easy task?
Not for me.
and Sorensen did it. And in addition, Kennedy said, I want it to be one of the shortest, the briefest inaugural address. And wherever we can take a phrase that has three sentences, three words, and we can use two, we're going to do it. Wherever there's two words, we can use one, we're going to use it.
Concise.
It's powerful. It's mostly verbs. It's an action speech.
And if you can get that message across in a smaller package, it really shows, it forces you to actually write it better.
That's right. That's correct. And it showed because, I got tremendous acclaim after I delivered that speech. Of course, then I invaded the Bay of Pigs. All hell went loose.
So back in 1960, what was the most consistent issue you had to deal with on the campaign trail? That being your religion.
Oh, that's right, Catholicism. I'm a Catholic, and I had to overcome the fact that the nation had never elected a Catholic.
Yeah, there was a prejudice of sorts.
Very much so. And at that point, I would have to remind audiences that...
I'm still a human being?
Yeah. I hope that no American, considering the really critical issues facing this country, will waste his franchise or cast away his vote by voting either for me or against me because of my religious affiliation. It is not relevant. I am saying to you that my decisions on every public policy will be my own. As an American, as a Democrat, and as a free man, it was good enough to get me elected.
Afraid you're going to smash Mr. Stoney there for a minute. That's great.
That's up to Mr. Tyson.
That's great.
First of all, three pressures have existed for quite some time in the universal and democratic societies. The first pressure is quite naturally to be liked, unlike Scott.
So, gee, thanks!
No, that's great. Whenever you can drop those in there.
I think it's going to be Scott.
Oh, man. Pick on Scott Day. It's all right. I'll allow JFK to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
But otherwise, I'm going to come after you in the night.
Yeah, don't make him go into his Mike Tyson mood. I'll bite your ear off. I'll bite your ear off.
No election or appointment conferred upon me ever gave me so much pleasure, other than being with Marilyn on my 46th birthday.
Amen.
My election as President of the United States was not half as so gratifying to my innermost soul.
And it was in that Congress that Quincy Adams joined the tempestuous fight against slavery leading up to the Civil War. You know, Mr. President, my ancestor, this is true, Wyman Bradbury C.V. Moore of Maine, served in the United States Senate with Senators Daniel Webster and Sam Houston, both of whom you write about. What can you say about this fateful period of our nation's history in general as it played out in the Senate?
Well, Tom, although history records next to nothing of your lightweight senator ancestor, whatever his name was, he did have a ringside seat for some of the biggest heavyweight title fights the Senate has ever seen.
No, not quite yet there, Mr. President. I think that there's another one.
Oh, Jesus, Mary.
I haven't seen nothing yet.
I don't know how we can keep it at all serious if he cuts in with Mike.
You can't do that.
Well, you have to say heavyweight.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, wow, Mr. President. Talk about climactic times and events. And one man, one very great man, a true lion of the Senate, would sacrifice his entire career and reputation for the Union only to go down in bitter defeat. I think both of us know who that was.
Well, Tom, was there nobody in your bloodline? That's a goddamn sure.
Wait a minute. Yeah, what skills did he possess?
Well, more than you, Tyson, or that Bradbury Seymour. Mr. Moore, whoever the hell it is, Mr. Moore.
And then I'm thinking of Mike Lift, you know, all right?
Hey, don't forget, I have a Secret Service here, and they've got bigger guns than you.
A lot of good they are in a pinch, eh?
Yeah, right.
They almost arrested me when I walked into 7-Eleven because I pulled out these guns, okay?
Yeah, right. You're just an NWA. All right. The most obvious was his presence while speaking. Ever since his first speech in the Senate, opposing the War of 1812, and Scott, that took place in 1812. Webster was a...
I always get that one wrong. When I have that random choice question, I always get it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, would that be something to say?
Yeah.
Throw that in, definitely.
Pick on Scott. When was the War of 1812? Right, although Webster was a spellbinding orator. Although not tall, he had an actor's ability to make whatever he said important. It's a lot like Obama today. His skills were so great that he was the northern member of the great triumvirate, the other two being Henry Clay and John C. Calhoun. I'd say that's pretty good company. I'm like being with you two motherfuckers.
Oh, man.
Thanks.
Oh, man, that's good. Yeah. All you listening in special content land, we told you there was good stuff in there. Are you glad you signed up or what?
Wait a minute, is this calling to anybody?
Who knows?
Only if you signed up, which
we have two subscribers right now.
All right, the inside and the outside. All right.
Actually, how many do we have?
We have about 20, 25.
25, so 25 people are going to hear all of this.
Okay.
Unedited.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm going to have to be nice to you.
No.
Well, Scott,
they sign up for this stuff. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Well, Scott, thank you for asking that question.
Which Jack would never say, you know that.
Only a five. And he'd only say it once.
Yeah. All right.
Adding California would have added one more free state.
Right, which would throw that balance off.
And that also meant that there'd be two more senators in the Senate from a free state.
Power grab.
And also, right, exactly, the political spoils. So at that point, the Southerners said, wait a minute, hold on here. Yeah. And that's when Henry Clay became the great compromiser for the second time in his career. He had also proposed the Missouri Compromise in 1820. If you guys didn't fucking read it, you'd know that. But in 1820, he did the Missouri Compromise. You've heard of that. And that was to admit Missouri as a slave state,
right,
provided they could add a free state. And the free state was northern Massachusetts, which we now call Maine.
Yes.
So Maine became the offset to Missouri. Here we are in 1850, President Taylor says, okay, let's admit California as a free state.
What cunning strategy that was being used even at that time.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
It's interesting. Taylor was a unionist and a patriot also. Some people say he was one of the first ones assassinated by those that were seeking to make money and exploit the country for a civil war. Like, actually, believe it or not, Taylor's family today had him dug up because they thought he was poison.
That's right. That was recent.
Yep. This is true stuff. So Taylor was a good guy, and he actually was a slave owner that didn't want the expansion of slavery. So as you say here, he did promote California as a free state.
Yep.
So then what did Webster come back with?
Well, at that point...
So it was a gold rush, people going out there. Yeah,
it was okay. And then, why would that proposal, that is President Taylor's proposal, upset Webster? Because Webster was also an abolitionist himself.
Right.
He was a true abolitionist. He was here from Massachusetts. He was.
Adams was not.
Okay, well, I'm not sure. We're not talking about Quincy Adams.
I know.
Thanks for bringing him up anyway.
It's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
No, but he was an abolitionist, as most Northerners were too. They hated the fugitive slave law.
Well, actually, there was a lot of. I actually did a piece with Robert Bennett Forbes, who's descended from the Forbes family, who wrote a book called...
Is that all you do is drop names?
is this really just about you and Bradbury Seabury?
Yeah, say something like that. Seabury, I like that. Oh, that's Seabury. Great. Seabury. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's awesome. But there were a lot of, all right, so in Lowell, that's where we had, like, you know, the Lowell Spinners baseball team now. The Looms were coming up, and there was a cozy relationship between what Forbes called the Lords of the Loom and the Lords of the Lash.
Okay.
So there's a lot of business interests that needed the cotton up here that were like, no, we don't like those abolitionists. Anything but them.
No, right.
But then you're right, there were some true, sincere abolitionists.
No, very much so. It had its roots here.
Right, there's no doubt about it. But like, still, even so, only a small percentage of the people were really abolitionists.
Well, like
probably
most,
like in the civil rights movement, you'd probably say the same.
Yeah.
Were there a lot of real civil rights people that went down south from Boston? Yeah, you better believe it. Then there's a lot of people that are like, what are you doing?
It's like most, like most great movements. Yeah. It's an active vocal minority.
You know, I hope you can really give it like a little more Jack, like as if Jack himself was giving Webster's speech. When you quote that.
Yeah.
It's really hit it hard like you did with us.
Well, I just did it for the first time, Dingleberry. Seabury.
Oh, that's great, man.
I just did it for the first time. All right, I'll do it again. I shall oppose all slavery extension and all increase of slavery representation in all places, at all times, under all circumstances. And against, even against all inducements, against all supposed limitations of great interest, against all compromises. And that's my final answer.
Are you sure?
Phone a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Much like I said my speech to the American people regarding the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah. I speak to you as a friend. As one who shares your deep attachment for your fatherland, as one who knows of your trials and tribulations. I just threw that in there because I forgot what it was.
That sounded good.
Mr. President, I mean, Cuban Missile Crisis, what I'm really concerned about today is the Cuban cigar crisis. I can't get any.
The Big Minuteman is a cigar aficionado.
Oh, you are. Yeah, okay.
The Havana cigars are known as the best. And from what you said, actually, Jack
was a collector.
Loved the cigars.
No, he got them before he imposed the embargo.
Yep. Well, that's what he says.
Good supply. Yeah. Cigars don't get better with age. They're not like wine.
Yeah.
That's pretty much true, depending on how you store it. That is true. They do ferment, actually. It is a fermenting process.
Wow.
When you see cigar making, they'll have these giant barrels, and when you lift it off during the fermentation process, steam is coming out of it.
No kidding.
Actual steam, it gets hot. But you're right, with age, unless it's kept in the right type of climate, there's tobacco that's been pulled out that's over 100 years old that's
humidor is.
So we hope you enjoyed the blooper clip from Mike's apartment.
Yeah, reliving that again, I'm still laughing. I am.
Yeah, side-splitting. And when we had Mike here to Scott's apartment and we recorded the main feature content.
You mean my crappy little apartment.
Yeah, that's being renovated right now.
Still. However, I want to make a note about that. The wood that you see in the background, I found out yesterday, actually about 2 days ago, that this wood comes from... or this place was built in 1896, which means that wood may have very well come from trees that were growing during the Civil War, which is what we were talking about.
So yeah, I have another great little clip here. So Scott's landlady just stopped down here and
to deliver some bread to me.
Yeah, well, yeah, you deliver her a lot of bread every month, too.
Yeah. So.
We don't even want to say how much, you know, but this is Boston. So she actually had been living in Winchester among oil folks that live in enclaves around the time of JFK's assassination. And she was at a party, and we're not going to say who, I don't even remember the name, but she was at this party in 1963, 6 months prior to the assassination, and one gentleman who was in the know said Jack Kennedy better not ever come back to Texas, because if he does, he's dead.
Right. This is a group of people that worked with her husband that were sent to Texas and had just come back, and they were hosting a party for for this group of people, and that that's exactly what she was saying.
That was her comment, and she looked like she was a lady in the know. So anyway, without further ado, here is our blooper outtake clip. A lot of that we have in the main content, but we had to bleep it. You've heard a lot of the bleeps, and so here you have it unbleeped. We hope you like it.
Yeah, unfiltered.
Yes. Unplugged, unfiltered.
And by the way, welcome to 2009. We hope you had a nice flight. And a nice frosty Sam Adams beer.
Oh, great. I've been kidnapped by the Three Stooges of time travel. What the hell do you guys want from me anyway?
I'm Curly.
What about Teddy?
That's why we call him Moore.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Mm.
Jack, say wow too.
Jack, I think your inaugural will go down as one of the most memorable, if not the most powerful. I think we're all happy with that.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. His
I can't do it any better. What do you mean? We're fucking happy with that. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I'm out of here.
That was awesome.
Well, so, Mr. President, your book identifies three pressures on public figures today. Can you tell us a little bit about what those are?
Well, yes, Scott. The first pressure is to quite naturally be liked, and senators are no different than any other American in that regard. We all wish to be liked. Some of us succeed and some of us don't. You understand that, Scott. When I first entered the Senate, I was told that...
Thanks, Mr. President.
Don't worry. There's more to come. And that's what Marilyn said.
Talk about climatic time... Do over. Wow, Mr. President.
Oh. Take a sip. Take a sip.
And President Taylor died from eating bad cherries. Of course, that never happened with you, Mr. President.
Well, I broke a couple of cherries.
Oops.
That's it. Last time. No more dingleberries after that.
Quite correct, dingleberry.
All right. No, you're quite... I'm going to start over. No, you're quite... Wait, quite correct is tough to say for Kennedy. No, you're quite correct here, Dingleberry. In fact, Webster had, throughout his career, made speeches condemning that peculiar institution as slavery. Johnny Cash was playing at the Grand Ole Opry, Scott.
I can't wait.
Are you rolling? Let's do this now. Who's there, Mike, and then after I say the punchline, say whatever you want. Thank you, Thomas.
All right.
Ready?
Yeah.
I have a knock-knock joke for you, Mr. President.
Well, very well. Go ahead.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Judith Exner.
Judith Exner who?
That sounds good. Almost convincing.
Is that what you said to Jackie? No.
I have
that's extra content.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. No.
That is extra content. But I thought that I was thinking about that. So I wanted that's cool.
You guys all set for beer, for water?
I'm all set.
Let me give you a little more water there, John.
I'm all set.
I'll start hitting my first beer.
Okay.
All right.
Huzzah.
Summer ale with lemon or regular Boston?
A summer ale with lemon would get this boy started. Now we're getting out of the script. Now I can have fun.
Yeah, now you can...
Is that the last that Texas or America ever saw them?
No, Scott. Tom, I don't want to do it again. Stop. I had Peking duck last night. It was delicious.
I had Peking ravioli, Mr. President. Over at the Quickie Chinese food place right next door.
Hey, we're going to check your cholesterol here. All right.
Wow. Can we use that in our advertisement?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. We do...
One question before I depart. I hear in the year 2009, did the Red Sox finally beat the curse of the Bambino?
Well, we could tell you that, Mr. President, but it might throw off the whole time-space continuum thing, just as it demolished the generational arrogance of Yankee fans everywhere when the Sox came back from three games down to take the AL pennant in 2004,
woo-hoo!
And again in 2007, and reverse a curse called A-Rod. I could tell you that,
now,
sir.
Now, wait a minute. I want it to happen again, okay?
I could tell you that, sir. But,
that's something that could have happened, right?
That's mm-hmm. correct.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
That's wonderful, gentlemen. Thank you very much. That makes me...